Live from the Eagle and the Child, this is Derailed Trains of Thought. Everyone, we're back for a regular podcast, and we're actually at some sort of normal location.
Here.
This I like tasty stuff.
I know. I like being here in England. It's good.
It's very quaint little spot we're at here. Although, I don't know what we're doing in the 1940s. How did that happen?
There is that little bit, but I was going to say there could be worse times, but maybe not.
Yeah, England, when you 1940s. Got Churchill on your radio, it's. Don't get me wrong. I love Churchill, but I mean that. It's kind of a bad sign. We're in the wrong time period.
Yeah, we're in the wrong time period. But at least we're not. We had to apologize for last episode. The microphone was going early, and we didn't really feel like doing it all over again. So
it kind of worked.
It seemed to make sense in the end. So
yeah, but now we're here. It's April. Well, at least back home, it's back April. Home, I'm not sure what month it is here.
I don't want to ask too much. I might ruin the whole time stream and something like that.
That's quite possible.
So should we go ahead and get jump right in?
Let's do it.
Story School. You know, I do feel a little intimidated, you know, seeing these seats talking as if we know something when other authors who are way better have sat in these seats here.
That's a fair point.
Luckily, like Lewis and Tolkien and them, they aren't here right now because...
Because then we just fanboy over them and make them record this
And they probably podcast. Like would read one of our things and laugh at it or try not to laugh at it. Like apparently they read of some other authors.
That's true. It gives me hope though. It makes me feel like we nowadays who like to do riffs on Twilight or whatever, you know, not too far off from Lewis and Tolkien apparently doing that with their own literary contemporaries.
But anyways, we thought we'd try to do something a little practical today. We've done a couple more philosophical and abstracty topics lately. I mean, meta's a little timey-wimey.
Exposition, romance. Yeah, you know, we've done some big picture stuff.
So we're going to do kind of like how to help you in your writing life.
Doo-doo.
And so we're going to talk about how to beat writer's block. And we're going to attempt to know how to beat writer's block.
We've sort of spoofed this. Remember back in the second year anniversary, we did a little spoof on our attempted cure writer's block. It didn't go so well. I mean, hopefully it was funny, but it wasn't actually very practical.
No. Actually, a lot of those spoofed topics we've then recycled, and we might try again, actually.
Yes.
Not the Looney Tune theology, but...
No.
But okay, so beating writer's block. When we were thinking about this, we thought, well, first let's figure out what kind of writer's block there are.
Mm-hmm. Do you want your list of this? Are you blocked on?
You have it in front of you in case we need it.
That's true. Okay.
So, but before I didn't write on the list, I was thinking, I think there's really two types. It boils down to two types of things. One is mental, meaning you just, for whatever reason, you're afraid, you can't write it. Another is more logistical, like you just don't have the right words or the right maps or the right whatever yet. Mm-hmm. But okay, let's go through some of these things that stop you from writing.
Okay.
I'll just throw one out is just fear.
Fear is a big one.
Fear. You're just like, if I start this, it will be, because it always happens.
Yeah.
The idea in your head is not as good as on paper. It never, the paper version is never as good.
And we talked about this especially in our why we parentheses don't create episode.
And this will hopefully be a little more practical than that episode.
Yeah. But it is a valid thing, and you need to realize that sometimes the only thing that's holding you back is you, the fear of, you know, even just getting started. And then sometimes you tend to procrastinate and have a different kind of fear. Like, say you've already started the project, then you get to a section like, I know this is going to be a pain in the butt to write. Yeah.
I tend to stop at endings, as you know.
Yeah.
Endings are hard. For some reason, I have a hard time pulling the trigger on the end. I don't know why exactly. It's...
Well, I think for you, you've said sometimes that it's like you've mapped out so much already so that when you get to the end of it, then you're like, okay, you've already kind of done with the story mentally, in a sense.
It's sometimes done mentally, or sometimes like with Strin... Not Strin. With Squire, it was partly that I'd hit the emotional... Like, I had done my great emotional scene, and then it was like finishing up things. And it was hard. And the thing is, the end of Squire, which we started this whole derailed trains thing back in episode one, finishing the end.
Yeah.
And it was
we're still talking about it.
I know. Imagine that. But it was partly logistical. And it's partly just whatever this fear thing is. And I just last night finished the very end of part two of Strin and Fred.
Oh, yeah.
I sat down and I pounded out about 1,100 words in like an hour.
And oh, wow.
It's probably too sparse, but...
But
another,
it's there.
Is there. And here's another thing of writer's block. Sometimes you're afraid of it not being perfect.
Yes.
And I think that might be part of it for me with endings. But you're like, okay, this scene needs to work just right for this book to work. And then... You don't write because you're like, oh, that's not quite right, and that's not quite right, and in a little bit I'll get it, and year passes, and you're like, maybe I should write that Strin and Fred scene.
Quick side note, I think I should throw in here, obviously since we're talking about writer's block, this would be primarily focused toward writing.
That's true, we don't have much of the filming.
But there's some of this, I think there's some, if you use your imagination, you can apply some of these same thoughts to other creative projects.
Yes.
I mean, getting started in any project is scary.
And I think the fear factor and a fear of not doing it as well as it should be done in any sort of creative endeavor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whether it's just the fact that, I don't know, that you personally can tell the story or that you... It's so easy to look at other people's works and say, I'm never going to be like them.
Yes.
But you have to remember that at some time, those people also... And probably still have some of the same thoughts as like, I'll never be as good as such and such person. Yeah, fill in the blank. So every writer, every creative person has these fears.
And I know I mentioned on the podcast at some point the War of Art, that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that book's largely about the fear, or he calls it the resistance. That thing inside of you that stops you from doing the creative thing. And you find anything else you can do humanly possible besides sitting down and doing it.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the big mental one. Mm-hmm. What else do we got here?
Let's see. We talked about fear. Sometimes there is just a lack of inspiration.
And sometimes you're just like, I don't feel like doing it today. I'm tired. You have ups and downs in your...
Sometimes, yeah, you can have legitimate reasons why. And I don't know that that's not necessarily always called writer's block, although I guess someone's wrestling with a period of writer's block, quote unquote, for a long time. That can be a part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes it's just... Not just a fear thing, but you're like, you can't you think of, you're not sure what the next thing is.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, and I'm, nothing happens now. You know, the end.
Yeah, and your story progress comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah, or sometimes you hit a roadblock and you're like, I just don't know how to, I mean, not even lack of inspiration, just there is no good answer to where I wrote myself in. This is if you're more of not an outliner.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and this has happened to you sometimes.
Yes.
I know that, and sometimes that's not a bad thing. Like if you come to this halting place, I know you've like put a story on the back burner for a long time, then come back to
and
it.
And I'll tackle that when we get to the
okay. On the other hand, though, then there's also I see here on your list boredom, wanting to start a new project.
Yes, I read the other day someone posted like traits of a highly creative people, and one of them was actually get bored with projects before finishing. I thought that was very interesting. I think people who tend to be more creative, this little article mentioned, they tend to love starting things, and that's where where the energy is in the beginnings, and not as much at the ends. At least, I think sometimes that happens to me. I'm not saying I'm a highly creative person. I'm just saying that resonated with me.
Sure.
Yeah, I love beginnings are fun, and endings are, I don't know if boredom's quite the right word, but you know... When I play Final Fantasy games or role-playing games, a lot of times, like, oh, I got till the last dungeon and I'm done now. which is just weird.
Yeah.
Because I think some writers live with their characters, like, they're feeling with their characters, and, you know, so they want to bring them to the end, and I'm a little more detached in some ways.
Well, I think even, like, beside the ending part, there is a possibility where you can... You know, you've just been writing the story for so it feels like so long,
or
thinking about it for so long, and like, I'm so sick of these.
Yeah.
You know, this that can happen.
Well, then the thing is, new things are always fun because you start like, oh, I'm trying this new thing, and then you forget that after 50 pages, you're going to want something new.
I mean,
it happens.
Yep, it happens.
So that's most of the ones we came up with.
Well, and then there's one last one here, and that's stuck in the planning phase, which is similar to the fear of beginning thing, but. again, that's just like the whole knowing it's not going to be as good as it is in your head.
Well, and part of and that, and I think some writers, I'm not much like this myself, but some writers, they love the creating the world, the what, and then they keep changing things or they keep tweaking the outer stuff because that's where their mind is or whatever. And I don't know whether it's because they don't have a story yet or because it is a fair beginning, but that is certainly a special type of. From what I understand, Tolkien was very much in this realm of let's keep tweaking how I phrase this scene or that scene. And
yeah, that's why so many of his projects were in a state of incompleteness when he passed away. But yeah,
because the world kept evolving constantly because it was and I think that's a problem for world builders.
Primarily. Yeah, no, I think that's true.
The interest is in the world and you keep finding new ways to play and you want to play with it, but you keep like, oh, well here, and you know, so they make really good like role playing books.
I think for me, like when I get stuck in the planning phase, it's more of the intimidation of getting started thing.
Yeah. And so. I think that's certainly a large part of it for many people.
Okay. So those are the problems.
Those are problems. You know, your own problems probably.
Yeah.
Most people do, mm-hmm. but I wanted to kind of get the range. So, okay. I'll just throw the first one out. Kind of the basic where everything starts, just do it. I mean, and that's easy to say, but that really is in many of these cases the primary thing. Now, we'll hopefully have some ways to help you just do it.
I know, because that seems to be, it's usually when you see a list of how to get over writer's block, just do it. It's just, usually toward the top of the list.
Put your seat in the, put your butt
in the seat and
write.
Yeah, basically. And I know there are some writers that really preach that, like, you got to write 1,000 words a day or 2,000 or whatever it is, depending on how professional you are.
Okay, so let's start find some practical ways we could just write. I think one for me is, you know, this doing a thought, you said, you know, doing it every day. What that does more than anything for me is it primes the pump. Mm-hmm. That if I take a break a week and then come back and then take another break a week, it's harder to get started. But if you're writing even just a little bit every day, you sit down for half an hour a day, your mind's unconsciously thinking of things between the sessions. And I think the first week is hard because you sit down and like, but then, you know, I find this when I work with Stuart Fred, then it's like, oh, I got ideas now. If I'm, you know, I'm at work, I'm like, oh, how about I do that? You know, uh-huh. sort of thing.
I know Laura Fisher, who's been on the podcast before, has said she used, I can't think of the name of it offhand. Laura, if you're listening, leave it in the comments. But there's some website or app or something that will, like, if you have a goal of how many words you want to write per day, you write it out in this thing. And so then it keeps track of it for you. And it's not even necessarily specifically your project.
Yeah,
it's
like just 1,000 words.
Just 1,000 words. Just gibberish. Yeah, talk about your day if you will.
She has one, I think. Or I saw one where it'll also, if you take too long to write, it'll start erasing your words.
No. Oh,
so you're like,
that's
it
evil.
Forces you to keep going. Yeah, there's all kinds of apps like that. I mean.
Mm-hmm. In some of those cases, when it's not even about specifically your story, I think the idea is that you're training yourself to get words down on page, or in this case, on the screen.
Like I used to, depending on what time of life I'm in, sometimes I'll say, I'm going to write this many words. I find nowadays, with a little busier and kids and stuff, I'll sit down from here to here every day. And if I get certain words done, I'm done. If I get way more, I get way more. But at least, sometimes, you know, some days, you know, getting 1,000 words is going to kill you. I mean, and some days it'll come like nothing. So I tend to do time more in my current state.
Yeah, I think it's all about finding a goal or a motivation that's going to work for you to get these words written or to put in that time.
Now, do just write. Now, that sounds all fine and dandy. But if you're afraid of starting, you're afraid of not being right, you're still like, okay, I'll write 5 words and erase them, 5 words and erase them. And then you really have to turn off your internal editor, I guess, as they call it. And and that's not always easy for people.
Yeah. It's very important for writers to get in the mindset of that the first draft doesn't have to be perfect. In fact, that's why it's called a first draft. It's a rough draft.
And I'm not real great at this yet. I think I'm better than I used to be.
Yeah.
But I find, for me personally, typing on a computer is not good for first draft. If I'm purposely trying to be fluid, I need paper to be fluid. Because I can make notes, I can cross things out, I can make arrows, I can make things and notes and things. And then I feel like I just throw stuff down here. And when I type it up, I can clean it up. And that's sort of my mental
break. Yeah, I know. That's how you do it. Me, I trying to literally write as I write would drive me nuts. It'd take too long. Yeah. Like, 'cause my brain typically works faster than just my hand would. Yeah. I mean, I can type faster is what I mean. So, I mean, again, you got to do what works for you. I think I can usually get sentences and even paragraphs out before I'll like, if I lose my place, I'm like, okay, then I'll go back and read through and stuff. But with like New Worlds Rising, I think I especially tried to not do a whole lot because I knew I would have an editing phase. Yeah. And I remember, I don't remember if I've mentioned it on the podcast before or not, but I did read a book once by one of the Muppet writers who did a lot of writing for Sesame Street. And he said one of his very first writing jobs ever, he wasn't really trained. He didn't go to school to be a writer specifically or anything like that. And he was having a hard time getting started. It was like some commercial or technical thing. To help him get started, his boss told him, well, write out the Lord's Prayer. And then he asked him, well, is this what your final product to be? And he's like, well, no, it needs to say this and this. And he's like, okay, well, then erase that first line and then write how you think it should start.
Yeah.
For this guy, his name is Joseph Bailey. If you want to read the book, it's called Memoirs of a Muppets Writer. but for him, the lesson he learned was he found it easier to change what you've written than to get it down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the point is, as long as you get it down, you can change it and make it what it needs to be first.
Yeah.
So, as long as you've got words down, that's a place to start.
I was just throwing, this is not really related technically to writer's block, but also when you're typing on the computer, having a computer attached to the internet is
dangerous.
Dangerous. And there's all kinds of things about that. You know, I like when I'm typing on the computer, I used to on my Mac laptop, which I don't use anymore, I use Scrivener, but you could go into blank screen and there was nothing else. The white screen. Yeah. And that was, I really like that. I wrote a lot of Snort like that.
I know I've heard from one writer who they did an interview on World, I think I'm listening at some point, young adult writer. Yeah, you might have heard of it, I don't know. But what he would do, he'd go to Starbucks, do some of his social networking stuff. Then he'd activate an app, I believe it's called Self Control. It basically turns off the internet for like a set period of time.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you any access to any of that. And I think it's customizable, so you can just limit it to like certain websites or something, the ones that you know are too dangerous for you.
Yeah.
So there's another tool that some people have used.
So obviously finding, you know, I think a rhythm, if you can get one going, is very helpful for prime the pump. Mm-hmm. Finding a way, whatever it is, to turn off your editor and get going.
Mm-hmm.
I had one that I was going to go into next, but you have the list, so you can start with what I'm thinking. I had one.
Well, I think an important one, again, if fear is a primary, is a big factor in that, is collaborating or getting someone else to, if you can have, and then that may sound scary to some people, but having another person, either just someone to read it and to kind of guide you along with it, or better yet, if you can find another writer to kind of work on it. And
hopefully someone who's not just going to be like a yes man necessarily.
Oh,
but also one that's not going to be like super nitpicky, because the problem with some editors is they want the story they want and not the story you're trying for.
Yeah, that's true.
If they're not used to doing that sort of thing.
Right, right. And it can definitely make a big difference. I mean, if you're interested in writing or really in any creative field, when you find those people that you share a common bond in some creatively, then man, you got to stick close to those
people. We're here at the Eagle and the Child, and apparently, you know, even these people did not all agree with each other about what should be.
That's
written.
True. Lewis and Tolkien, Lewis liked pretty much all of Tolkien stuff, but not necessarily vice versa.
Yeah.
Although I wonder, did Tolkien ever say anything about
Space Trilogy?
Space Trilogy?
I don't know. I would think he would like that better. But
I feel like he did, because that would be more internally consistent.
Yeah.
Consistent?
I think so.
Cohesive?
Probably both.
Both.
Okay, just because on my head, I'm going to start some... because there are actual some writer's block that's like, you're trying to work out, you know, like, okay, I can write this, but this is not the best ending, or not the best next step, or like, this fight scene is going to be really a pain.
Yeah.
Or some of the lack of inspiration. Mm-hmm. It's very important for creative people to find a creative rest, which is different than procrastination. Mm-hmm. Procrastination, like, I'm not going to do it, I'm going to watch TV or whatever. But something that you go and do.
The Star Wars trailer came out today. I must devote an entire hour now to
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Reading up on what everyone said, and, you know, like back when Lawson was on. And like, I will spend the next 2 hours reading everyone's recap of.
Guilty as charged.
Me too. But. But I think finding that type of rest that also allows you to be creative. You know, the guy, you had the example of the writer who go to the coffee shop and do his social networking. Some people like the background noise and being out in the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a sort of energy there. I know I've mentioned many times right on the podcast, if I can go for a long walk with my iPod and I have something I'm stuck on, it will work, you know, and I come up with all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I think having the sort of rest that isn't escaping or isn't not maybe not even escaping, just that is purposely set up to help you be creative.
I think I read back in high school that walking or pacing actually does, it's scientifically proven that it does help stimulate thought. Okay. And help. And that's been true for me too. Not necessarily sometimes with creative writing, but even like school papers and stuff, you know, when you're just trying to figure out where you're going to thing, I'll pace my bedroom or wherever I can. And it, I don't know why it works, but I guess perhaps it's something because of the way the blood flows, it circulates through the brain a little bit easier.
And it's amazing how the body is attached to the mind. I mean, well, how we move and do stuff sometimes, you know, much better than just sitting around on your computer staring at it. I mean, sometimes, you know, we say just right, but sometimes the best thing is to not
stop
right.
Writing. Yeah,
to stop. And knowing the difference between the fear, which basically is just right, and the, this is maybe not, John Cleese, I watched an interview with, he gave this talk one time about being creative. And he said lots of things about how to be creative. But one thing is that he tended to be the most creative just because he spent the longest time thinking about it. Like, he didn't take the easy answer. He for the end of a skit or something.
Okay.
Here's what was the easy thing to do. And then he'd keep wrestling with it past that.
Okay.
And a lot of it was just having that time wrestling with it. And, you know, if you have a friend, throwing ideas off. Mm-hmm. I like to see if, you know, Tim and I were brainstorming the other day about Joan the Wells. And I'll just throw things out that weren't expected because maybe it'll work.
Yeah.
Maybe not. It might be dumb, but
who knows?
Dumb things are not necessarily bad.
And sometimes you have to now analyze dumb things to kind of get to, okay, if not that, then what are we going
why
for?
Why is this not working? Why would this not work? Or, you know, because sometimes it was interesting. Nathan called me like 2 days ago. He's working on a short story for an anthology. He just starts talking to me and he's like, oh, okay, I know what, you know, he just had to vocalize it in some ways. And then he's like, okay, I like this more and more. And I said, hey, I think that's a good idea. And you thought about it. He's like, yeah, things to sit in your head unformed until you either write it or say it. It's not quite real.
It's not too unlike, you know, if you've got something that's stressing you, you know, and they say it's, you don't want to keep that bottled in. You got to let it out some way. You got to talk to someone about it.
Now, it's interesting. Natasha, my wife, when she's creative, she has an idea. She does not like to tell anyone. She says as soon as she speaks out loud, she doesn't want to write anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Which is
interesting phenomena. Yeah.
So again, it's very different for everyone, but I think finding those creative patterns for some people might be going to a movie. I think I wouldn't be creative at plays, musicals.
Yeah.
Like I like musicals make me after that. I want to write a musical. Like I'm like brimming with like ideas and stuff.
Yeah.
It's music, but,
it's all music.
And just that energy and that excitement and that, you know, then you're like, oh wait, oh yeah, I wouldn't put excitement in my book too, you know? But after a while, it's just like in his words and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you gotta, sometimes you do need to find that spark of inspiration of like, why do I like imagining things again? You have to go watch that Pixar movie or Miyazaki or whatever is going to like just spark it in you again.
And you know, and I completely agree with that. And then there's also times where it's worth writing even when you have nothing. I always have this example. I was writing my first Strindfred book. I wrote a chapter a week and sent it out to people. And there's this one chapter, just horrible. It just took me forever and it was horrible to write. And later on I thought, oh, this is one of my better chapters. But it's a funny thing with writers. Just because you're excited about a scene doesn't mean it'll end up being a good scene. The emotional or something, just because a scene or chapter felt like you were pulling teeth out doesn't mean that it's going to feel like that when you reread or when reader reads it.
Interesting.
That I think sometimes you have to get to this point where it can be good and sometimes and many times it is good even if you don't feel it as you're pulling it out of you. And that there is this sense of, you know, you just do it because you do it, you know, just write.
Right.
I mean, you want to have the creativity and whatever, but once you get it flowing, sometimes it's just like, I think there's times where you just push past the wall, like runners have in marathons, you know, you just do it.
I think a useful perhaps guide to like, when do I do this and whatnot is having goals with your writing or with your projects. If you know that you want to have a book finished or done, you know, certain, you want to be at a certain place in your book by a certain time, that will give you all the more motivation to push through those moments, like you say.
And especially if someone who's, you know, if it's just your own goal, you'll be like, ah, I'm moving up a week, or, you know, especially if you have someone else saying, hey, where's your book?
Yeah.
You know, or where's that chapter you promised me?
I mean, I know it's not the best way to do it, but I know even when I was in school and grad school, I was one of those people that I needed the deadline of this is due tomorrow.
Some people don't work unless they have the adrenaline of deadline.
Yeah. And and I can't say that it's always that way, but there's a lot of times when like that would come about. It's like I couldn't do it too far in advance. I could get, you know, maybe a little tidbit here and there, think about sort of stuff, but a lot of the big push would have to be like the day and night before. And so if it's a personal project, you know, not something that you're doing for work or anything like that, you'll need some sort of like artificial means of making meaningful deadlines. Yeah.
Now, what do you think? Having just said that, I'm going to now play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Is it worth then sometimes putting a project on hold for indefinite parts of time? Is that writer's block that you should just push through? Or is it sometimes beneficial to let a project sit?
Oh, I think it's absolutely beneficial. I mean, you've proven it a couple of times.
Yeah, I don't know what would happen if I didn't let it sit. But yeah, I was asking because I've done this just recently, actually. I was writing a short story. I kind of got stuck. Like, I kind of knew where I was going. I'm like, and I probably could have pushed through it. But while I'm brainstorming for that, I got an ending for a story I started a year before. So I'm like, I'm going to go finish that story now.
Well, and that's what I mean by it depends. I don't know if I said it, but I think it does depend on what the project is. I mean, there's some that you're going
to... you have to get done.
There's some that you know that you have a certain kind of priority for. Yeah. You know, like your recent... book for children as well.
Yeah, Jason, you have to finish it one way or another.
Yeah, you know, like,
deadline.
And I know you were like unsure about some things. If it had been just a personal thing, just kind of for a lark or for practice, then you like also left it sit for a while.
Yeah,
but in that case, you're like
just push it, and it ended up being much better than I thought it was when I was writing it.
Yeah,
so I mean, you can't always trust your gut reaction,
right? And I think it's totally fine. Again, some of these projects are going to be more for yourself than for other people.
And I know even hearing from writers like, I think it was J. Michael Straczynski, he's always working on something. He gets stuck in one, he just moves to something else that he always has the flow of creativity going and sometimes just moves. And I mean, obviously when he was doing Babylon 5, he just pumped out scripts because he had to.
Sure.
I remember reading one, he had like 101 degree fever and he doesn't remember writing half of it, but he just does because that's him. He's crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, when he's just the sort of guy who just kind of floats around doing whatever he writes, you know, he's always writing something and somebody just moves it around. Stephen King might do the same thing. I'm not completely sure. But a lot of the writers write a lot of stuff, partly because they're always writing, even if they're put something on hold for a bit to let it simmer. And I do think, I mean, a lot of creativity is done unconsciously. There is something to be said about letting something sit, but you need to know when is it for logistical reasons or when is it because you're afraid of it.
Yeah. And I know going away from writing for a little bit, I know part of even the podcast, because, you know, every once in a while, I was like, is the podcast really all that worth it? We don't really have that many people listening to us. But, you know, it's a continual outlet. And that's in that sense, it's useful. And, you know, you and I get to have fun conversations. It really doesn't take too much out of my time. At this point, not nearly as much to put it out there. I mean, the Weekly Hijack, I can do. I purposely do that on a very quick turnaround because of, you know, wanting to get out soon after the recent episode.
Well, and the nice thing about, like, also, you know, things nice like push. The Weekly Hijack is, you know, it's an excuse for us to not just absorb things, but to process.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of creativity. I mean, whatever you're doing, you're basically just processing life and turning it into something.
That's
sometimes in a very just reaction, you know, recapping sort of way, or my response, like, you know, gut reaction. And sometimes, like, here's things I feel about life that I would like to communicate to other people, whether it's like adventure and, you know, wonder, or it's some sort of philosophical treatise or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Or meta or romance or...
And we learn all kinds of stuff talking about it. You know, I tend to come up with more stuff after the podcast is over. You know, because you get it all talked out. You get the surface level things kind of shook out.
Uh-huh.
And then there's that space in your brain that's like making connection. Like, oh yeah, we just talked about that or this or...
Yeah. It's been very strangely serendipitous sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, that's the fun of just, again, just being in the creative process, no matter what
it
is.
And I think that's why people say just write, because if you're not putting the words down, you haven't yet created anything. Mm-hmm. And until you're creating something, you can't have the serendipitous things coming together. I mean, you can have some of it, but I think you get a lot more, everything starts connecting more once it's put down on paper. The act of actually, T-R-E-E means a tree, and it's now out of my head as an image and now on paper as a mm-hmm. word. Now I'm getting philosophical. But.
Well, it reminds me, I've been reading Proverbs lately, and there's a number of those, you know, when you're in the actual Proverbs part of the Proverbs, there's a number of these that are about the hard worker basically bringing life, but the lazy or the sluggard or whatever, just kind of wasting away.
Yeah.
Which the inclination is, you know, especially in modern world, just take it easy, chill as much as you can, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. But sometimes the longer you do that, the more, you know, you get overweight or you just get completely lethargic, and it sucks the life out of you by too much inactivity.
We're not meant to be dead seas. We're meant to, I mean, not just things going in us.
Yeah.
The dead seas, because nothing, it doesn't flow out.
It doesn't flow out, yeah. So you got to be able to let it out.
Let it go.
Dang it.
Anyways. Yeah. I guess one thing I wanted to mention, too, is that they always say, I think I've probably mentioned on the podcast, you know, you need a million words of crap before you get something good. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening if you're just going to wait for it to get perfect. Mm-hmm. Which is why it's annoying where you have this great idea and you write it and it doesn't turn out as well. And you can revise it and make it good. But at some point, I think you just move on. Mm-hmm. Like I always use the Miyazaki example. Most of his movies are all basically the same idea. You know?
There's a lot
with
of
different angles, different
Yeah, there's
emphases.
A lot of repeating themes. Yeah.
And I think mm-hmm. I think that's most people, if there's something you really want to say well, keep saying it over and over again, and eventually you will say it in a way that makes sense to people.
Now, can you say that again, Nick?
Yes, if you... No.
Awesome.
That's most of what I had. I mean, again, I guess it's not... You wish you had these, like, here are 10 steps to do it. But, you know, life is not actually that simple. I mean, you can sell blog posts really well that way.
This is derailed trains of thought, not BuzzFeed.
No. I mean, BuzzFeed is what people are like, I want to write a book. Here's 10 ways to do it. Or I want to be popular. Here's 10 ways... But...
It's not that simple.
It's... Life is... Life. No. No, but you got. Yeah, but I think you got to know when to hold it, when to fold it.
Know when to walk away and know when to run.
Yeah, exactly.
On that philosophical musical note, I think there's some good practical advice there, but
you got to know which one's
which one
is you.
Yeah, which one is you?
Yeah.
So what do we have next? Next,
I think it will go for a soundtrack. If the podcast does nothing else, I get to listen to good music every 2 weeks, and my brother gets to skip it.
he doesn't even know you just said that, by the way. We can make fun of Zach as much as we want now. Zach.
Okay. Anyways, so this song is Magnet Missiles from Mega Man 3.
You cast Magnet Missiles.
I attack the darkness. I chose this one because when I wrote, the only time I ever did National Novel Writing Month, and I had to try to just churn out, well, it was supposed to churn out 50,000. I did 25 because 50,000 is rough for me at that rate. But I wrote Buckethead, and every day I would sit down and write a chapter in about 1,000 words. Mm-hmm. And I played this song nonstop. This is the unofficial theme song for Buckethead. It is a lot of fun. And if you can't write something exciting after listening to this 10 times over, you have no soul. So,
wow, harsh.
So this is remixed by JJT, Pitteretti, something like that, and Zyko.
Okay, here we go.
Enjoy. All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that soundtrack. If not, I feel sorry for you. No, but now we will go to...
What If?
All right, well, we should... You know, we thought about doing like a what if Tolkien wrote a time travel episode, and then we actually did some research on that. Now that's just fun. I had to throw that in because Tim and I did some research on this time travel thing he was going to write in about Numenor, except also taking place in the 1940s. No, 80s.
Wasn't it? 80s. You're right. It was 1980s.
Yeah,
but it was like partly inspired by the Inklings. It was weird.
I mean, they're like fake memos and notes of this writing club.
Yeah.
I mean, look up the Notion. What is it? Notion Club?
The Notion Club. Look it up on Wikipedia.
It's
stuff. It's in one of the History of Middle Earth books, but...
I mean, we were talking meta last episode.
This is kind of meta.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious. The article said something about at some point C.S. Lewis had written like some commentary on the Lay of Lúthien. Was it Lúthien or was it...
I don't remember now, but he had written like a history commentary. It's like
it's like where the papers, the original, you know, manuscripts came from.
I mean, it was just, if you guys had the internet, I don't know what would happen.
It would have been fun.
But that's not our what if today.
Yeah.
Our what if is, so I live in a small town, Kendallville, and I'll drive to work and home from work and then go past our little two screen theater,
uh-huh.
The Strand. And there's always on the billboard the two movies they're playing. And sometimes I read them and I think it'd be fun, you know, and I try to read them as one movie, you know, and I think that would be an interesting movie.
Well, because like, I'm sure they tend to abbreviate sometimes.
And sometimes they abbreviate. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So what got me thinking about it, and I thought we'd just discuss what this movie would look like.
Okay.
The first one that really, really got me was Cinderella Insurgent. So I thought, okay, now that's a Cinderella movie I'd go and see.
Okay. Now, so is this a... Are we going Cinderella as in like an actual princess with a dress and stuff, or is it more the term like Cinderella, like kind of underdog type thing?
Well, my gut reaction was more the gut reaction like maybe it's like a dystopian sci-fi, okay?
Okay.
And you
like
know,
Wachowski's type thing.
What kind of thing? Yeah, and then you got this upper class full of these, you know, capital-esque people.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then the Cinderella insurgent is the person who has disguised herself as one of these upper class people, you know, in order to overthrow the prince.
See, okay.
Okay. And she has her glass slipper that she can talk back to the base with.
You're going for a pretty straightforward route in that sense. Then.
That was just my initial thought. Cinderella insurgent.
Okay, you could almost go. What if it was the opposite way? This doesn't make any kind of logical sense, probably. But what if it's like a society of all like vagabonds and, you know, people who like basically just live in filth. And then you've got this insurgent of people that want to like everyone to clean up and dress up nicely and stuff.
I like that a lot because the Cinderella insert, because she's the one who's decided to go to the ball. And everyone else is like, what's a ball?
Yeah.
You know,
like we're living here with the mice and stuff. Yeah. What's your problem?
I kind of like, yeah.
So, okay, so there's
two versions. We can come at least one. Okay, so Cinderella Insurgent.
So now, are we going real deep into this one, or are we trying to...
Those are two quick ones. If we can think of another one quick, I'll go with it. Otherwise, I'll go to the next, like, what happened the week after that showed up on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, you want to go into another pairing?
Yeah, another...
Yeah, let's go with that then.
Another pairing?
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next week, then it was Home Insurgent, which...
That doesn't work. Insurgent? What was Home?
Home is that... It's like an animated film about these aliens. Apparently, it's real cute and funny.
Oh, okay.
I have not seen it.
I think
but
I completely
some of my
missed
other
that one, apparently.
Well, family things stay a long time here in Canville. Be there.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Or Insurgent Home. How about that?
Insurgent Home.
Like, maybe it's like a nursing home for people who tried to overthrow the government but didn't.
No, see, I was thinking about this household that was like that formed like a mini rebellion in of itself.
Oh, like
the renegade homeschoolers.
Yeah, it needs to be like some sort of like modern, like it talks about cynical America. You know, like it's like in one of these perfect housing additions, and there's this one home that decides to be completely different and crazy.
Like everyone else's house is like, you know, nice white and blue stripes, and then you got one that's purple with pink polka dots.
Yeah. And everyone, you know, everyone else are like doctors and lawyers and stuff, and these people are like circus, a circus, like a family acrobat. It would be awesome.
I like it.
Insurgent home.
Insurgent home.
Be great if the home itself moved. Like it was on like, it could like.
So it was like the island and Lost?
I guess. Well, you could drive around and
or maybe go. Or maybe like wheels popped up. It's a Transformer house.
I mean, it's a circus. You know, it's a circus house.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. And so it's like, so it breaks through the crusty upper class of, I don't know why I have the upper class Adele. Cinderella's gone, but it's left over.
The insurgent thing. So.
Insurgent thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Insurgent home. I like that.
That's nice. All right, so you have.
Unless there's a home, there's people who make homes for insurgents.
Oh.
Like it's a behind the scenes, like the people who do the who build the bases for the people. Like a day in a life sort of slice of life sort of story.
So today we're working on our fourth rebel base for
the. I think it's awesome.
It's like a documentary.
It's a documentary about making rebel bases.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'd go watch that. So it's like all that like in the background is all this war and stuff, but it's just talking to the one guy who and so this one we made with these double doors that came down, and we really worked hard on how the alarm sounds. So it sounds warning, but doesn't get underneath your skin.
We particularly like having titanium on these walls because it's not as expensive as pure platinum. These rebels don't have a huge budget, but this stuff, it's plenty strong. You know, it's going to take the tanks at least 5 tries to bust through.
This most recent one we're working for this new insurgent over here was supposed to be a floating ocean base, and this was really pushing our. We had to pull out all those stops on this one, and then they've got the moon base, and
That'd be fantastic.
We need to make that. Okay, Tim, next episode, I think we need to have radio episodes of this from now on the podcast. Insurgent home.
Like something they'd show on HGTV.
Exactly. They had to do Tiny Home and the Treehouse. You ever seen those?
Oh, yeah.
Like the Treehouse ones? Yeah. It might be like that. Yeah. My mom loved the Treehouse ones, the tiny homes and stuff. We need one insurgent home.
The projects for people with
too much
money.
Or like the ones who do the preppers. The end time preppers. You ever seen that? When they prep for the end time, they show their bunkers and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Okay, insurgent home. Any reality TV show people out there, we will sell you this idea.
Mm-hmm. We just want, we put our names in the
credits. And give us a little money, some royalties. Yeah.
You'll be set. You'll be set. This is a genius idea.
Okay. So that's home insurgent.
Okay. So did you have any other pairings?
And then last week I drove by and it was Home Furious 7.
Wait, Home Furious 7?
Yeah, because Home's still playing, but now Furious 7 is playing. So it's Home Furious 7. So this is the 7th in the franchise. Okay? Or it could be 7 people.
Well, I was going to say, it could be like Big Hero 6. Yeah. Type thing.
No, that's the sequel. It's Big Hero 6 and Home Furious 7.
I'm picturing like some sort of family drama thing, like of like WWE wrestler. Just sort of like, because didn't Hulk Hogan have like some sort of reality show at some point with his family and them all yelling at each other?
I know there's a, Natasha, that's what it is. There's a reality TV show on right now. I saw it advertised before where they're undertakers. They own a funeral home.
Uh-huh.
At night or in hobbies, they also do like minor league pro wrestling, like luchador sort of stuff.
Okay.
Like the same family. Like it's
different buildings, I'm assuming.
Well, I think they're just involved in the fighting. And I'm like, what? Anyways, that's what you're talking right me. Home Furious 7.
Some business families, they're interesting.
Or Furious Home 7, I guess. But
it's like,
have you ever heard
of like let's run a coffee shop, a taekwondo studio, and a motorcycle shop, and a rental shop.
That's ridiculous. Yes. And a bookstore.
What kind of crazy family?
For a while.
Yeah.
Insanity. Who would do that? Have you ever heard of Home Stuck?
I've heard of it. I don't really know what it is.
It's like this MS. I don't get it. I was there. It was Home Furious 7 makes me think of Home Stuck.
Okay. Is it a webcomic?
It's kind of. It's like Sounds like a MS Paint adventure is what they call it. But like they keep adding things you like click through the pages, and I don't get it. I'm sure someone listening has some idea what it is. I don't.
Sounds like a weird corner of the internet.
Yes.
Maybe
they have soundtracks and stuff they sell. I mean, it's crazy.
Maybe that's something we should explore, and it came from the interweb.
We should.
Sometime.
We should do that. So, okay, put the file out away.
Footnote.
Okay, so Home for Your 7. We still don't have a good.
Yeah.
Maybe they're all here. We go. Okay, it's like Con Air. Okay.
Okay.
So it's this house of like all these like. For whatever reason, you have to have someone sort of set up, but there was all these like very dangerous criminals, but under house arrest, all in the same home.
Okay.
But it's kind of like a Con Air comedy, action,
mm-hmm. Kind of forced
caper,
to work together type thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Like, well, maybe they're all kinds of different types of criminals. Some of them are dangerous, some of them are not. They're all stuck under house arrest in this one house. Maybe there's a blackout. And, you know, yeah.
And they're forced to work together.
Yeah,
and...
Home Furious 7.
Okay. Here's another idea. This is actually a spinoff series from Home Insurgent.
Okay. So
because you've got the house that's on wheels or whatever, yeah. Right?
Okay, that version of Home Insurgent.
Yeah, that part of Home Insurgent.
Okay.
So you've got your house on wheels, and then, so picture it like basically house monster trucks.
Oh.
So now,
nice.
So you're keeping a little bit more of the actual Furious 7 thing, but then the idea is that you've got all these houses that are like, you know, going, it's like Rock'em Sock'em.
Robot. Real Steel.
Real Steel, yeah. Yeah. The house.
Or maybe they can be, you know, maybe
Demolition Derby.
Maybe I like to throw things in weird genres. Maybe the home Furious, they're like escape pods from worlds or something. Like they're homes, like they're in space. They're like floating like little home worlds, little tiny self-contained things.
Okay.
Or maybe they're like seven of them and only one is left. This is number 7, like Babylon 5, you know. This is Home Furious 7.
Oh. Interesting.
And I'm not sure where to go with that. I'm not sure why it's furious.
Is it a sentient planet?
No, I don't think they're... I think it's like the name of the ship. It's Home Furious 7. You know, it's like,
okay.
Babylon 5 is the Home Furious 7.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay,
like,
gotcha.
Like maybe the plant blew up, like Krypton, and there were 7 ships sent out holding the population. They were homes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they were all based on like, you get it get all weird. They're all based like sins or something. Like there's Home Gluttony 7 or 1, and I don't know.
In Green Lantern, there actually is a sentient planet.
Oh, well, it could be.
Yeah.
I'll take Home Furious 7. Yeah.
But I mean, that's just the, I don't know, it came to mind. But
I don't, so maybe this is the last surviving of the 7, like the others
like
are just
though.
Gone.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I'm not sure, I haven't quite worked out, you know, why it would be called Home, I get the Home 7, I don't know why the Furious.
Yeah, why the Furious, yeah. If it is the last of its race, and it wouldn't be kind of ticked off that it's the last one, maybe.
Maybe you could pull in some Greek mythology. You know, the Furies were like the ones who would tell the future. And so I'm going Jupiter Ascending, like weird sort of sci-fi here at this point, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe, you know, there's all this, these... That's just weird. Okay. But I'll say it anyways. As we said with getting rid of writer's block, you just say stuff.
And then you're like, no, never mind.
And, you know, maybe they were all like... precogs, you know, so they can all see the future.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there's like the Fury. So this is Home Furious 7.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how that would go. Can you imagine a whole colony of people can see in front of the future? I mean, that's either a deeply psychological thriller or a comedy.
What? How is that a comedy?
If they could all see the future, you can't see how that would be great comedic stuff. Some of the conversations. I mean, maybe like a heady comedy.
Yeah.
Especially as
I'm intrigued.
Maybe they encounter other planets and they just mess with them.
Okay. That's
Home Furious 7 for you.
Sure. We'll go with that, Nick.
Okay. I think our audience, what there is of it, needs to vote on which of these movies need to be made.
Yes. Yeah.
Or TV show. I mean, Home Furious 7, like, as that would be a TV, like a miniseries, like a Netflix original.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
I think the winner of this whole bunch has been the
Home Insurgent?
Home Insurgent one, yeah.
Or Insurgent Home. What are we going with for that? For reality TV.
Insurgent.
It would be Home : Insurgent.
I think Insurgent Home.
Insurgent Home.
Yeah, okay. You probably saw it on the list. As well,
I don't. I don't remember which order it was in now. So that's what I got. I mean, this week it's Mall Cop 2 : Furious 7, which is a little hard to pull off.
It's one mad mall cop. That's all you need to say about that.
Yes, that's very. I like to see that, like just like the Hulk as a mall cop.
Mall cop, too furious. Seven.
So this is a seventh edition of the mall cop being too furious.
Yes, exactly.
That is awesome. That is.
That's all. That's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know. It is a. You turn to sci-fi and you watch it and you wonder where your hour went, but. Well, that's what we got.
That's all we got. And I think that's...
That was good.
We had a long story school.
Oh, did it go wrong?
Story school. Okay, awesome. It did go a little bit long.
Okay. Well, then I guess we'll...
Do you have any updates? You said you...
I'll do a note. Yes. I finished the second third of Strin and Fred. Now, I know it seems weird when I talk about it in thirds, but they're like, it's like, you know, Lord of the Rings, each of the little books has like... Part one, part two, and they're very distinct. Mm-hmm. This book's really set up like that. It's like 85,000 words, the second part. The first part's 65, so.
The first two-thirds of your book are already longer than your previous book.
Yes. Now, I was telling Natasha today, book three, partly why it's so long, it purposely tries to get rid of plot lines. I mean, book four should be more streamlined. Mm-hmm. I won't say it will be how long it'll be at this point, I don't know.
Right.
But a lot of the plot lines by the end of this book coalesce. This book really is trying desperately to not let things go crazy. That's the whole point of many of the plot lines.
Right. Now, I've often thought the first two books, and this analogy won't hold true for the whole Strin and Fred series because it's not as long, but the first two books of Strin and Fred were very much like seasons one of two of Babylon 5. Yeah. Like the first book, you kind of establish all the characters. Yeah. Second book, you kind of move everyone forward, but didn't really resolve anything.
Yep.
For the most part.
Three resolves a lot of stuff, but not everything.
So is book three...
it's season, three and four together.
Seasons three and four together.
And okay. book four is part of four and five.
It's what probably the way five should have been.
Probably, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because originally I had planned on Babylon 5. I would watch Babylon 5 when I planned it, and it was supposed to be five books, but it's not worth the fifth book.
Yeah.
I mean, for a very variety of reasons. So I did that.
Do you still think one last question about this. Do you still think, at one point you said part three of book three, Strin section would be the shortest of the book. Do you still think that's going to be the case?
Here's my problem. I still think it'll be shorter than the second section, almost assuredly. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's as long as the first, simply because, I don't think there's as much setup plot because it's a little more focused. The Fred section, which is what I just finished, had a lot of characters running around, and I compressed it. The Strin section is basically Strin.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that I always think endings can go faster than they do, and they take a lot more time. And the endings, a lot of tying a lot of stuff together.
Oh, so, from throughout the book?
Yeah, from throughout the book.
Oh.
So I could see it being as long as the first section.
Okay,
I think there's less plot of the strictly Strin stuff, but then there's the connect everything part. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay.
I finished a short story.
That's right.
Trudy.
It's up on the website.
Yep, up on worksofnick.com.
Mm-hmm.
And probably by the time this comes out, or soon after, the fourth Jason story should be out, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're pretty close.
We're aiming to get that out by the end of the month.
Yeah. The Call of the Watchmen.
Call of the Watchmen.
I like it. I think it's a good step in the Jason story. I mean, it leaves a lot of stuff unresolved, but it also moves a lot of things. It moves a lot of things forward pretty quick, and then throws some problems.
So there's some new characters.
And some fun characters.
Some old characters. Some
new characters.
Yep.
Some young characters.
Anyone who's worried that it's going to be another...
It is not Will's Orphan.
It's not Will's. That poor book. We misalign it. So, I mean, it's a good book, but it's a certain type of book.
It's easy to make fun of. I mean, it's like you pick movies to riff that have a certain genre. It's just a genre that's easy to make fun of. I mean, I love Will's Orphan. I think it's probably one of my best written Joan the Wells books, just because of the poeticness of it, which is partly why people don't like it.
It's a very focused book.
It's very focused.
I mean, that's the strength of it. The thing that people kind of, it's sad. It's uber sad.
Yeah, it's tragic.
It's
not the end, luckily, but it's an end.
Yeah.
So it's like the Long Dark Night of Lando Malari.
Yeah, essentially.
It's a Long Dark Night, Kalia Leeson.
But this is a good time to get into Jason if you've not, because this book is kind of the beginning of the next
arc. And next you can obviously read the first three, or we still got to put together, I think of this today, previously on. But you could jump in here pretty easily once we throw that page of previously on.
Yeah, I think. So. I think so. It'll be...
You have some references that might not make sense, but...
Yeah. I think there'll be some things that'll be a little easier to condense, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, that's coming up.
So I got like all kinds of stuff getting done this month.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome.
I'm going to do some, and my hope is to do a little bit of Buckhead work this month as well.
Oh.
I just figured I'm going to just get that thing done.
So. Your edit on
it? My edit on it, yeah.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take long, in theory. So that's my life.
Awesome. I don't have an update for you yet about...
But you're considering, you mentioned something in the Meta podcast that you were getting close to doing, maybe.
Yes. I still think I am. But I always find this is one, again, one case where it's part procrastination, the fear thing, but then there's also, I kind of realize, oh, I had this Children of the Wells trailer thing that I kind of put in the back burner for a while because I needed to go find people to do voices for it.
Yeah.
So, but that's progressing, and then we'll get, hopefully do some more advertising for that. And at the same time, trying to work on this other thing. I don't want to put a name to it yet, but soon.
So, for our audience, please vote on your favorite What If. Also, we have a whole list of topics, but if there are topics that you would like to see us discuss, we'll always take suggestions. Because
always open to ideas.
We're always ready to revamp our list. We look at it sometimes like, I don't know if I want to do that today.
This one has been on the list for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, probably even since the beginning we knew, we'll probably do writer's block eventually.
Yeah. So
because it's a popular topic.
Yeah.
So we had to tackle it.
So okay,
but it was a good one.
Yeah. So introduce our soundtrack and then we'll do our sign-off stuff.
Yes. Well, I think we typically do contact info first.
Okay. Well, you can get a hold of us at derailedtrainsofthought.blogspot.com. That's our website.
You can listen to us at a variety of places. You can subscribe to iTunes. You may find our incomplete versions of the podcasts at mixler.com/derailedtrainsofthought.
Stitcher, we're on if anyone uses Androids.
Mm-hmm.
On YouTube.
Or on YouTube. We update weekly Hijack a lot more often than we do our regular podcast, even though we think our regular podcast is the meteor, it's the complete
one. But you want to hear us just ramble for about 10 to 15 minutes on shows?
Fun stuff. Lost in Once Upon a Time.
Yep.
Still ongoing. Get in on that. Meantime, let's do a soundtrack. Am I missing anything?
I guess email, derailedtrains@gmail.com.
Yep. Okay. For my soundtrack, what with an old pun? Writer's block. So let's do Tetris.
Dun dun.
Blocks. Get it? Okay. This song is called Linear Groove. It is by a remix by Benjamin Briggs. I have no idea how to classify this. I think in DJ's write-up, or in DJ Pretzel's write-up, he compared it to some band that does gypsy funk.
I'll take gypsy funk.
It's kind of similar. It's catchy, it's fun, and it features like some of the Type B music.
Oh,
it has the Tetris theme that everyone knows, but it also has the other one, which doesn't get as much airtime.
Gypsy funk sounds like a Maze Dude made up genre.
It does. Well, I think this is the sort of music you'd only hear on OC Remix.
Yeah.
But it's good stuff. It's upbeat and peppy, and I think you'll like it.
Well, we bring it out. I think the Inklings are actually coming, and I really don't want to sit in their seats.
Yeah, that's true. I feel we might get some stern looks and some lectures.
Yep. Yeah, I'd rather not get that. So
I just had this image of like Lewis and Tolkien, like being like punks, like you're sitting on our seat. Doesn't make any sense, but
but we should draw that somehow.
All right. Well, let's get out of here.
All right. Adios, everyone. This is Nick,
and this is Tim.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Cheerio.
Ta-ta.